Thank you. Ms. Harrison.
Chair and panel, myself and Mr. Scorer represent 9 core participants in this strand of the inquiry: H1, H2, H3, A299, A337, in relation to Hillside School, who are all either parents of children who were abused by Nigel Leat or victims and survivors of Leat themselves; A345 and A334, who were both victims of covert filming by Jonathan Thompson Glover at Clifton College; and A301, who was abused by Lindsay Collett at Headland School. Finally, we also represent a campaigning organisation, Board in Concern. I start with Hillside School. All of our clients would like me to put on record their shock and horror that last month the parole board took a decision to release Nigel Leat from prison back into the community. Whilst our clients understand that it is not part of the remit and scope of this inquiry to consider the parole board's decision, it's important for you to understand their distress that, having been given an indeterminate sentence, Leat has only served nearly 9 years of that sentence for hideous crimes committed against children. Our clients do not feel Leat is safe to be released given the scale and nature of his offending and his level of grooming and manipulation of both adults and children. They all firmly believe that he remains a risk to children. It's important for you to know that they have not received any counselling or other support from the authorities in relation to his release. They want you to know the support for victims and survivors of abuse when their offenders are released from prison is virtually non-existent. This is something that needs to change to ensure a truly victim-centred criminal justice system. Turning to other matters, our clients were frankly staggered to read the witness statements of Christopher Hood, the former head teacher of Hillside School disclosed by this inquiry. He appears to feel sorrier for himself than he does for the victims of Leat. He even says at paragraph 50 that he thinks that because of his own personal experience of what he went through at Hillside with Leat, he has some insight into the damage they have suffered. He completely misses the point that he is not the victim here. The victims were the children who were abused by Leat. His admission that he is not even bothered to read the serious case review, as he, and I quote, has been too traumatised by the whole affair, is deeply insulting to our clients. Our clients as parents of young children or young children themselves had to face giving harrowing police interviews, giving interviews to those preparing the serious case review, and have had to face a lifetime of psychological consequences due to Leat's abuse. They have shown courage, bravery and determination to seek justice and to protect others from Leat. In contrast, they consider that Christopher Hood has shown a complete lack of personal awareness, a lack of moral courage, failing to even read the serious case review, and a complete lack of understanding of his role in the catastrophic safeguarding failings under his leadership at Hillside School. The responsibility he must bear for that and for Leat's offending under his watch over many years cannot be understated. I turn to Michelle Bamford, the deputy head at the time of the abuse. In her witness statement, she also appears to completely wash her hands of her own responsibilities as deputy head for what occurred at Hillside under her own leadership and management. She appears to simply want to scapegoat Christopher Hood, the head teacher, without truly coming to terms with her own inaction and why she was not brave enough and competent enough to speak up, speak out and protect the children that were in her care. All of our clients have been shocked to read the findings of the serious case review and the catalogue of failings that took place over a number of years at the school. Suspicions, reports and warnings in respect of Nigel Leat's behaviour were simply ignored or not tackled effectively or at all by the school management team, leaving him free to abuse vulnerable children in his care. Our clients are very concerned that Ofsted rated the school as good in 2 inspections prior to the abuse being discovered, yet these inspections took place at the very time when Leat was abusing children at the school. Ofsted do not seem fit for purpose so far as safeguarding is concerned, and I will return to that in a moment. All of our clients support a change in the law so that teachers and other people who work in schools are required to report any knowledge or reasonable suspicion that a child is being abused. Our clients believe that mandatory reporting in the form advocated by Mandate Now would have prevented Leat from going on to offend for so long and spared at least some of his later victims. Our clients believe discretion over whether to report leads to a failure to report in many cases. Our clients say it needs to be made really easy for someone to report their suspicions and that they need to be able to report suspicions to somebody completely independent rather than the head teacher or the Board of Governors. A mandatory reporting law puts everybody on a level playing field. All knowledge and reasonable suspicion of abuse has to be reported, so nobody gets to avoid doing this because of pressure from others, or their own embarrassment or negligence, or uncertainty about the law. You just do it, and then it can be investigated. Turning next to Clifton College, our clients were both covertly filmed by Jonathan Thompson Glover during a school-sanctioned trip to Cornwall. Our clients feel that the culture of the school at the time allowed Thompson Glover to act in plain sight. Appropriate professional boundaries were blurred because the school cultivated an ethos focused around personal relationships and who you know from top to bottom at the school. This left an opening for abusers like Thompson Glover to act without suspicion or censure. Indeed, it is clear from the Penny Jones report that Thompson Glover was able to draw upon these loyalties to escape suspicion, including his close friendship with the then headmaster, Mark Moore, who himself showed a staggering lack of judgment in this case. Safeguarding was not seen as a priority at the school, and our clients have read with dismay the disclosure from the inquiry, some of which concluded that Mark Moore could and should have done more to challenge Thompson Glover's behaviour at the time. Indeed, Penny Jones notes that in around 2006-07, an educational psychologist external to the school apparently remarked to two Clifton teachers that Thompson Glover fitted the profile of an abuser and warned the head teacher about his grooming behaviour, particularly the way in which the boys were selected for trips to Cornwall. Our clients recall that Thompson Glover very much had favourites, and those favourites were pupils who were seen as intelligent or sporty or theatrical and who could therefore add value to the house competitions and other activities. If you weren't a favourite of Thompson Glover, he would very much make it known, and our clients can see that they were groomed by Thompson Glover, who would act more like an older friend or a friendly uncle than their housemaster. He made them feel he was somebody they could let their guard down with, relax and enjoy themselves with. Penny Jones notes that the chair of the council, who retired in 2010, and several other teachers at Clifton were aware that Thompson Glover had favourites and that parents were unhappy about the situation. Furthermore, one student described to Penny Jones how in 1999 or 2000, he and his friends heard a huge commotion in Thompson Glover's study at morning break. A group of sixth formers had tied Thompson Glover to a chair. The chair and tape were visible in his study, and this incident was discussed widely within the house. We note the student's mother was a social worker, as you've heard before from his scolding, and thought that Thompson Glover's behaviour was inappropriate and could have had sexual connotations. She had a meeting with a deputy head to complain about the incident, as well as Thompson Glover's neglect of the younger boys. She recalls that the deputy head made no commitment to investigate the incident and did not make any notes. There were further rumours of Thompson Glover being tied to a chair on the cricket square in his underpants. Again, no written records were kept. Both our clients have been profoundly affected by the invasion of their privacy once they discovered that Thompson Glover had been filming them in his bathroom on the Cornwall trip, in extremely private and intimate situations. It has caused both of them a profound sense of shame, embarrassment and anxiety that their images may potentially have been put onto the internet. Our clients were not given an apology from the school or adequate support. They simply recall one big meeting where a counsellor said, "There is my office. If you need me, book an appointment." They do not think this was good enough. They believe that once they were identified as boys who were impacted by Thompson Glover's criminal activities, they should have been spoken to again in an individual, sensitive and private way and offered appropriate support. But there was no aftercare. They were not offered any additional assistance in relation to their studies or examinations or any emotional support. As teenage boys who were trying to process what had happened to them, it was very difficult for them to deal with the revelations without that support. At the school, everyone was laughing and joking about it, and so the only way to cope was to carry on laughing and joking about it on the outside. Inside, they were feeling shocked, disgusted, embarrassed and depressed. They have not seen anything in the disclosure to convince them that should something similar happen again to other boys at the school, the college would have the requisite level of sensitivity and understanding to ensure that appropriate support, both psychological and educational, would be provided. They are very keen for the inquiry to understand that the lack of support was a key factor in their distress and that all schools should focus on ensuring they have proper support in place if children are abused. They have read with dismay the information which details the failed ISI inspections, the fact that the then head teacher Mark Moore was unapproachable and discouraged complaints, and that until the most recent head teacher was in post, there seemed to be little or no culture of any organised structure of safeguarding within the school. They worry that the ISI only got under the skin of what was going on at Clifton College after Thompson Glover was arrested by the police and not before, and that the inspection system is simply not fit for purpose, as surely things should have been identified much sooner. They note that there continue to be concerns about the current safeguarding management and structure within the school. Finally, at Headlands School, our client, RSA 301, was groomed and abused by Lindsay Collett. Our client has read with dismay the witness evidence disclosed to this inquiry, which seems to paint the investigations into Christopher Rean and Lindsay Collett as being a break in the previous culture of safeguarding in the school, or lack of. So far as our client is concerned, there has been no break in the culture. And in fact, the response to the concerns about Collett was simply a continuation of that culture of failure to recognise abuse, investigate and act on it promptly, and crucially, to listen to and support children. Our client notes from the witness statements of Stephen Rogers and Tony Marsh that once concerns about Collett were raised by other teachers at the school, Collett was spoken to, but her version of events was simply accepted. In particular, Stephen Rogers in his statement says, and I quote, "Her behaviour seemed to be more naivety than anything else, and we felt that it would be better dealt with by way of training and for an eye to be kept on her for a few weeks." When Stephen Rogers spoke to RSA 301, it was simply to tell him off for using a member of staff's mobile phone. At no point during that conversation did Stephen Rogers see RSA 301 as a potential victim of Collett, simply saw him instead as a naughty boy who needed to be disciplined. No attempt was made to get under the skin of what was really happening and to probe further and to ascertain if Collett was simply naive, as Steve Rogers thought, or whether something more sinister was going on. It appears to our client that Stephen Rogers was gamed by Collett and manipulated to think that she was the potential victim here rather than any of the boys who she could have been grooming for abuse. Our client is convinced that the reaction to the concerns about Collett of both Tony Marsh and Stephen Rogers was coloured by the fact that she was female and he was male. Our client is strongly of the view that had Collett been male and he had been female, then the school's response to concerns raised by other members of staff would have been markedly different and would have included suspension of Collett. RSA 301, from his own professional background, believes that if a teacher was caught hugging children in school and meeting and communicating with children outside of school, then suspension pending an investigation would have been appropriate. RSA 301 was stunned to read at paragraph 115 of Stephen Rogers' statement that he believes that they caught Collett when she was grooming RSA 301. Our client wants to make it clear that it was not Stephen Rogers or the school that caught Collett at all. Collett was caught because RSA 301 disclosed the abuse to his mother, who in turn disclosed the school. In fact, RSA 301 wants the inquiry to understand that the telling off Stephen Rogers had given him regarding the mobile phone, making no attempt to investigate or explore the underlying causes of his behaviour, despite the concerns of the teachers had raised about Collett, actually made it less likely rather than more likely that he would disclose what was really happening to the school. This was not an investigation of any kind, either by the ladder or the head teacher. Stephen Rogers simply got lucky that RSA 301 was brave enough to disclose what was happening to him before the abuse intensified. Had our client not been able to disclose, then the abuse would no doubt have continued because the so-called investigation done by the school was completely inadequate and in reality was not an investigation at all. Therefore, we repeat our point that this was not a break in the previous culture in the school and a new era of effective and professional safeguarding, as the statements disclosed this inquiry tried to argue, but simply a continuation of the old and very dangerous culture of simply believing the teacher without question, lack of professionalism around investigation of allegations, seeing the pupils as the problem, and not having a child-centred safeguarding policy and culture. Turning to the support provided to RSA 301, he was provided with very little support. He wants the inquiry to make proper recommendations as to the type of support that should be provided to children in his position. He would like to see a standard protocol drawn up by the Department for Education with a step-by-step guide of what to do in situations where a teacher abuses a child. This protocol should include steps such as how to speak to the child and communicate with them, how to ensure that they don't feel excluded or left out, how to ensure that a fully rounded counselling support package is put in place, how to ensure that their education does not suffer, including considering extra tuition and one-to-one support, and special measures in exams if relevant. He also considers that there needs to be better mechanisms for whistleblowers to enable them to speak out without putting their career in jeopardy, which would include mandatory reporting. Finally, our client wants to stress that he believes that the inquiry should investigate carefully how male victims of abuse feel when they're abused by females. He understands that this is a relatively rare situation, but he wants the inquiry to understand the unique experiences of male victims of sexual abuse by adult females and societal prejudice surrounding this. Everybody assumes that it is a schoolboy fantasy to have a sexual relationship with a female teacher. It is treated as a joke or something that can be part of a rite of passage for a teenage boy. Our client doesn't feel that it was treated as sexual abuse as in a consistent way as it would have been had he been a girl and the perpetrator male. He was certainly made to feel as though he was not a victim by others, which has left him with lasting physical and mental health problems. He wants this inquiry to think about this and help to start to change society's attitudes to male victims of sexual abuse by females. Finally, our client Boarding Concern is a charitable organisation set up and run to support adult former boarders who have experienced psychological, physical and sexual abuse or harm whilst attending boarding school. Boarding Concern has had many supporters writing to them over the years about the sexual abuse they suffered, mostly as young children whilst at boarding school. The common themes have been profound and lasting harm they've experienced and the pain, bewilderment, deep isolation and silence they suffered as children. It is very clear that care for those children did not exist within the systems that the school had set up. Boarding Concern repeatedly come across cases where abuse was known about by many people, but all colluded. Silence was maintained and the system survived because the care was non-existent or poor and there was no way that abuse could be safely and successfully reported. A key issue is that boarding school children are separated from their families, and this makes many of them very vulnerable indeed. Specially designed regulations are needed to protect them. This raises a fundamental problem, which is that the safeguarding framework for regulated activities, which includes residential schools, is based on social work practices principally designed for child neglect within the family home. Understandably, a framework of law is absent from these practices because it cannot be enforced in a home situation. This same framework is then misapplied to regulated activities, which includes boarding schools, where children are in the care of adults other than their parents. The problem is then accentuated because inspection bodies such as Ofsted and the ISI are staffed by experts in teaching, not safeguarding. And when they do their inspections, they are simply not focused on safeguarding issues. Indeed, in phase one, and now it seems from the disclosure considered in phase two of the residential schools investigation, a thread running through has been that in school after school examined by the inquiry, there's been abuse going on for years, yet Ofsted and the ISI produce positive reports on that school over many years. And it's only after the abuse is uncovered by some other means, at that point, Ofsted or the ISI return to the school and suddenly uncover a catalogue of safeguarding failings, which patently should have been identified earlier. The inspection system simply doesn't work. Therefore, we say that different and specific regulations with legal powers need to be developed and added to those at present applied to all regulated activities. They have entirely different demands and challenges to those which apply in home situations. Accordingly, along with our individual victim and survivor clients, Boarding Concern wants to see a number of changes. First and foremost, mandatory reporting along the lines advocated by Mandate Now. Secondly, a national training scheme for local authority designated officers. Thirdly, accredited safeguarding training for providers of training to all regulated activities. Fourthly, proper safeguarding inspection and clear reports by the school inspectorates. With all of these vital components added, we submit that the existing framework can be made to function with much greater reliability. Chair, thank you very much. Those are our submissions.